Welcome to the Amateur Movie Review Hour. I'm Trevor, and with me I've got Megs and I've got Josh.
Hello.
Erection.
Ooh. Hot takes.
Not what we're talking about, a kids movie.
Is it a kids movie?
It's a kids movie.
Yeah, I don't know, man. There's some
not
murder.
Not by today's standards, but by the murder. By the 1980s standards, we didn't have a huge problem with murder in children's shows and movies.
Yeah.
True. True.
And this was specifically made by the director as a children's movie.
Well. Yeah. It was also in an effort along with Tron and Last Starfighter to do video game movies.
Yeah, it came out. It was released with Last Starfighter, which I really wish I'd seen at the theater with both of those movies.
When you got Henry Thomas, who was in E.T., which is known as the worst video game of all time.
The worst video game of all time, and there was a poster for it in the shop.
Oh, yeah.
I did not see that.
He should have had a cooler name instead of Morris.
That's a great name.
That's could have been better.
Did you think he was a cool guy?
No.
He was not supposed to be a cool guy. He was Morris.
He's a genius, though. He's so clever. He can outthink death.
Back then, it was all about the nerd. It was all about nerds in the 80s.
I guess. I don't know. I like, dude, it's over my head. I was
movies had to have a nerd. You had to have a nerd in the movie.
Not kid.
Yeah, you had to have a nerd in the movie. There was always like a nerd somewhere.
But he was like the lord of nerds, though. He was like, get away from me, peons. You don't know shit about nothing.
Yeah.
I'm going to play your fucking game, kids.
He reminds me of the comic book guy in a way from The Simpsons. The attitude in that regard.
It's definitely taken from that.
And he was sort of the inspiration of what my topic that I want to briefly go over. Which is just the history of video games. Very quick. It started about the 1947 when the most like basic video game was created, and was created on like a cathode ray tube. Very basic. Like nothing that we even grew up
with. Not even Pong, yeah.
Yeah, no. Something that was similar to Pong came around in like the 1950s. Which was used like an oscilloscope, and it simulated tennis in a way. In some way, they were able to manipulate the ball from one side of the oscilloscope to the other side over what looked like a tennis net. During that time, that was like the 50s. And from then on, universities and like research institutes would try and recreate video games, and they did. They had some. But it wasn't until about 1962 when the first real video game or digital computer game called Space War was available outside of a research institute. And that sort of led the industry to be created and then to create. Because then you got into the 1970s where now you have actual like arcades, you know, full CRT arcade. What are they called?
Cabinets.
A full arcade cabinet. Six feet tall, 3 feet wide, and
like I like my women.
Yeah, and those eventually ended up becoming smaller and handheld. Maybe you guys remember like Tiger Electronics.
Like I like my women now.
Tiny and handheld. And then, you know, you get your famous ones like the Atari. That's a console. They also did
ColecoVision.
Yeah, yeah.
I had Intellivision.
Nice. I don't know what that is.
What was it? Consumer Reports rated it very highly. Oh, okay. And that's why we had it.
Sure, yeah.
That's why we also had a Betamax.
Sure, yeah. Then computers really started becoming a consumer product. So now computer games were being played, but they were computer games, but eventually it all became a video game. Through the 80s, you had different types of consoles, the biggest one being Nintendo. Once that hit the general market for America, video games took off from there. It's part of the United States culture is video game.
I mean, worldwide by far.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, worldwide, definitely. Yeah. I personally love video games and enjoy those. I grew up on them. Not Atari, but Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega. I'd never seen this movie, so it was interesting to see the genesis of the video game genre. Like video game movie genre.
Yeah.
I knew that Tron and Last Starfighter were, but I hadn't really known about this movie at all.
Yeah, and Last Starfighter, of course, is an arcade. It's a cabinet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a home movie. And then this one was like kind of the early on when everybody was getting them in their houses. Everybody had a system in their house when I was a kid.
Oh, sure.
Like, we did not have the cool Atari one that everybody else had, but everybody I knew had some sort of system at their house by the time I was, you know, like third or fourth grade, you know, which would be like 83, 84.
Mm-hmm.
But when this movie came out in 84.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I was more of an arcade girl. I did not like home systems when I was a kid. I didn't like the way they played. I didn't like the way they looked. I didn't like the handheld stuff. I liked going to Peter Piper or to Tilt at the mall, and I liked playing on a big machine.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see, and I had the opposite. I rarely got to go to an arcade, as what you, I believe that you knew was going mm-hmm. out throughout here through the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew anything like that.
Yeah.
The only time I ran into anything close to an arcade was going to like a skating rink.
Yeah,
you know, where they had just that section where all the pinballs.
You had the skating. Pretty much any place that catered to kids had some sort of arcade in them. Any, like the pizza parlors, all pizza parlors at least had one game in them.
Yes,
you know, so whatever game was in your closest little pizza parlor, that's where you started, and then you branched out. You know, if you had to go a little further when you were old enough to ride your bike a little further, or you were allowed to take the bus by yourself, and you could get to the mall, and then you could go to the arcade at the mall. And then the bigger malls had the bigger arcades, and you had Castles and Coasters that had the big arcades that were, you know, multi-level.
Mm-hmm.
That would, you know, those were the days when you were just trying to beg somebody to drive you somewhere.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Did you have a favorite arcade game, I should say?
I did. And I sad to say, I don't remember the name of it.
Aww.
I was obsessed with a game at Peter Piper Pizza. I would stay there late. My mother would show up looking for me, and we drove a sedan, so she'd follow me home on the bike,
mm-hmm.
my bicycle, instead of throwing the bike in the car.
Yeah.
And I was obsessed with having only my name on the I would get really upset when I showed up and somebody else had taken over, you know, with their initials on it.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time and money playing that specific game, and I don't remember the name anymore. And I think I tracked it down at Cobra.
Okay.
And I, for a little while, I knew what it was. And again, I don't remember anymore because it's been a few years since before the pandemic and all that stuff. And I'm like, what was it called? Because I believe it had two different names.
Okay.
It was one of those weird games that was remarketed or something like that.
Sure.
So I'll have to track that down again. It was a spaceship game.
Okay.
Like a shooting spaceship type thing.
Yeah. Josh, how about yourself? Did you have a arcade game that you'd like to play?
I like the co-op ones. I think Rampage is one of the ones I like because it was at the roller rink. You know, and they made you go to the roller rink when you're a boy, and you're like, I don't want to fucking skate. I want to play video games.
Yes.
So I'd be over there playing video games with skates on, like almost falling down, but there'd just be a bunch of us nerds over there just fucking going to town on those fucking buildings.
Yeah, I didn't have a favorite one. There wasn't an opportunity to really actually like spend a lot of time with one.
No Galaga?
No.
Galaga's a great one.
I know of Galaga. I've seen a Galaga cabinet. I've probably used an emulator and played it a little bit or watched somebody.
Galaga's
play it,
one that you're still gonna run into every now and then. If you
Galaga,
see
Centipede.
Mm-hmm. Centipede, mm-hmm. Yeah,
Asteroids.
If you walk into a place and they have some vintage game, it's going to be like Galaga, or it's going to be Pac-Man, but Miss Pac-Man actually. Yeah. It's going to be Miss Pac-Man.
It's always Miss Pac-Man. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't really have a favorite. I just tried to play as many as I could when I could. Where we lived, it wasn't close to anything to be able to like, oh, I'm just going to ride my bike down there and fucking go play. No. We'd have to drive like, I don't know, maybe 6 to 7 miles into somewhere.
Yeah.
Before we hit any type of like, okay, here's somewhere to go play. I was console. My console was where I was at. But I don't think I'll ever quit. I enjoy it. I enjoy playing games. I do. What is the Amateur Movie Review Hour? Before we began our podcast, the three of us curated a list of approximately 100 movie genres. We then fed that list to a magical random generator that we use to provide us with a movie genre. The three of us take turns choosing movies to watch that fit into the chosen genre. We then watch that movie and attempt to return bi-weekly to review and discuss that movie. The only movies that we have banned are Marvel and DC movies from the past 15 years. I am not a professional movie reviewer. I just love to watch movies and then review those movies with my friends and you, my fellow screen fiend. All right. The title of tonight's movie is Cloak and Dagger. The screenplay was by Tom Holland. The story by Cornell Woolrich and Tom Holland. And the director was Richard Franklin. The top two actors, pretty much the only two main actors the entire time, Henry Thomas, Dabney Coleman. There were some other actors in there that I recognized. Now, I'll get to at least one of them for sure. The release date, there was August 10th, 1984. And then prior to that, I guess it was like a double feature in July 13th, 1984 with Last Starfighter.
Mm-hmm.
The runtime is 101 minutes. Megs, why this movie? I think we know why, but...
Well, number one, we picked it out of respect for the great late, or late great Dabney Coleman.
Yeah.
Is it my favorite Dabney Coleman movie? I don't know. I like a lot of his movies, but I love this movie. I've loved this movie since I was a kid. I did not see it at the theater.
Okay.
I saw it. My parents weren't big on taking me to see kids' movies, but we watched them on, we watched whatever came on cable. So I probably didn't see this until the following summer when it probably played nonstop on HBO.
Yeah.
And we watched it whenever it was on. I think always think of this as a summer movie, so I'm assuming that's when they played it nonstop. And I love the look. I like the feel of the movie. Of course, it's a little corny, a little cheesy in parts, but it just it reminds me of the way things looked and felt back in the 80s. How excited we were to play with walkie-talkies, especially awesome ones like that really were like real ones.
Yes,
they're humongous.
Yes,
you could probably murder a person with that, beat them to death. But it was like we were excited to play games like that. We actually did, you know, we go on adventures when we were kids and do things, and we watched ourselves during the day while if our parents left the house or went to work or whatever, you know. So it really brings true having to find a phone to call for, you know, you had to go find a cell or a payphone. That's what they're called.
Yeah.
The one thing I did notice about this movie that I always remembered, it was the bus pass. I swear this movie must have been paid by the bus pass corporation. Sure. Like they constantly talk about the bus pass. They have their bus passes. They show their bus passes. I never had a bus pass.
Yeah.
I think I was on a bus like maybe four or five times in my life.
Sure.
Even though our house was next to the bus stop, we didn't go on it a lot. I certainly wasn't going to get a pass for it.
Yeah, I never had a bus pass.
I kind of wanted one after I saw this movie, you know, because I thought it'd be cool to just flash your badge. It's like you're flashing your badge. Yeah. And you didn't, back then we didn't have scanners, so you just kind of showed hopefully it was real, you know. Yeah, like,
bus driver's not going to check.
He doesn't care. No. I'll bet they were probably a hot commodity. There's probably some kid at school just making bus passes left and right, you know.
Of course. I'd never seen this movie. This was the first time that I had seen this movie. I wish there was more Dabney Coleman than what there was. I think maybe you're correct, and this isn't his best one because I don't think it's his best one. I'd probably have to say 9 to 5 was probably his best one.
9 to 5, yeah. Oh yeah. And even Short Time, which wasn't a great movie, but he was so good in that movie. But yeah, 9 to 5 is one of my favorites. I love 9 to 5.
Yeah, it's a classic. Josh, had you seen this movie before today?
Yeah. I saw one as a kid. Do I remember half of it? Like, fuck no. Again, like honestly, like I remember he was like, I'm a spy, I'm cool. And he was like egging on the child the whole time. That's what I remember. But
yeah,
outside of that, like I don't remember a lot of it because I watched it when I was a kid and like once or twice. Like you said, probably like some HBO weekend thing or something like that.
Yeah.
When they were cool and they'd be like, hey, here's a free weekend or a free week of fucking HBO, guys.
Yeah. Oh, I missed those weeks. Like, those were great weeks. You're like, wait, hold on. Why do we have HBO right now?
They're like
You get to the TV guide, they're like, this week, HBO's free.
We always had it, but we didn't always have Showtime. So we would always would always check Showtime to see if they were
America
doing a freebie.
Was honest. Yeah. You know? Now they're like, hey, you got to try this out. We're going to give you a subscription just in case you forget to renew it when you don't want to.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we'll charge you. We won't remind you that we're going to charge you, but we'll charge you. Yeah. I don't know what San Antonio, the city, was thinking of when they said, yeah, you can come film in our city. Like, show our beautiful one section of the river walk.
And that was great.
This one high-rise building over here. Don't forget the Alamo.
That was not the real Alamo.
The outside was the real Alamo.
Yeah,
just not the inside.
Yes.
But the Riverwalk, I always wanted to go there as a kid. You know, like, I thought it looked really cool.
Sure.
And everything reminded me of the way going to popular tourist destinations looked back then. They weren't overcrowded. They weren't dirty.
Okay.
You didn't have people in their underpants wandering around. You know, like, everybody looked normal. You know, like, everybody was pretty respectful except for, you know, the thugs who were trying to kill the child.
Sure.
So it had that kind of nice, you know, feel back then. And now it's, you know, it's kind of gross. So it was nice to see it again the way it used to be.
Yeah. It was very 1980-esque. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a snapshot of American culture.
Yeah.
In the 80s, for sure.
Oh,
for
yeah.
For sure. You guys want to get into this spoiler-filled review?
Yes, please.
All right.
I think Joshua just drank the whole can.
Nope.
Most of it.
You know, you're sitting there, you're talking, and you're like, this is going to be fun, this is great. But my mouth starts getting dry, and I'm waiting to open the can, and Meg just keeps talking and fucking talking.
Ooh. Have fun walking home, sir.
There's a lift now. We're not living in 1986 where you got to run everywhere or try to catch a bus.
Yeah.
Do you have your bus pass?
Yeah, of course.
The movie opens with some ominous music before the title reveal. The next shot shows the outside of a Russian embassy at night. There is a party happening inside as some guards patrol outside. The two guards exchange some words in Russian as one of them hears a plane flying overhead, and he looks up to see what the noise is. The guard leaves his post and walks into the road as he follows the noise. As the guard scans the night sky, a man using a USA flag parachute drops down onto the Russian guard. A US secret agent emerges from the parachute. It is Jack Flack, who is played by Dabney Coleman. With the parachute managed, Jack walks away while whistling. We cut to the other Russian guard who is searching for his partner. The guard approaches Jack as he waits near the embassy gate. The two speak in Russian until Jack uses a blowgun to incapacitate the Russian guard with a small dart. Jack approaches a just-arrived diplomatic limo, and he watches the occupants of the vehicle exit. He pays close attention to the woman, and her male Middle Eastern companion notices Jack noticing the woman. Also exiting the limo is a rotund military official that has a briefcase handcuffed to his wrist. Jack uses his nifty watch to saw the handcuffs off the wrist in order to steal the briefcase. The German chauffeur attempts to stop Jack, but he disposes of him easily. And then the Middle Eastern dude does his best to stop Jack with a knife, except Jack blocks the attempt and plunges the knife into the attacker's chest. Jack thinks he's having a moment with the woman, so he removes his beret, but the woman surprises Jack with a derringer that she pulls from her bosom. When she shoots Jack, it ricochets off the beret and strikes her in the chest, killing her. Jack grieves only for a moment before he has to retreat with the briefcase. Yards away from the escape, a heavy metal gate blocks his path, preventing Jack from escaping. He turns around to see two large dodecahedrons, or D12s, rolling towards him down the road. When the rolling dice are about to impact him, he jumps out of the way with some hilarious sound effects. We cut to Davy Osborne, who is played by Henry Thomas, and he is explaining to Kim, played by Christine Nigra, how his player character, or PC, is able to escape. Morris, played by a real young Bill Forsyth, doesn't want to play anymore either. And Kim's like, yeah, the motherfucker keeps killing me. But Davy's just too good at dice rolling. Davy spies some handheld two-way radios, and Morris has some missions that he wants the children to go and complete for him. They are to retrieve a computer parts catalog. Davy wants something more exciting, so Morris then tells them that they can go collect some Twinkies after they get the parts catalog. With the radios in hand, squirt gun loaded with fake blood, and Jack Flack figurine pocketed, the two children head off to collect items for Morris.
It's also not how you load a squirt gun. I don't know what the fuck is going on there. Like, it's weird.
This was before they started putting the orange tip, I think. Oh, way before that.
That was when I was like a teenager or an adult.
Yeah.
I think.
Because some stupid kid got shot because he's pointing a gun at somebody.
Yeah. Because I loved fake guns. And I did have toy guns that had the orange.
Oh, so did I.
Some of mine did have the orange tip. They just weren't. It wasn't a regulation.
So if it was going to be all black, you had to have the tip orange. But if you were making it any other color than black, you didn't have to do anything on the tip because it was a brightly designed gun.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't... I don't think it was regulated until the mid to late 90s, but some people did, of course, make them with orange tips even before it was a regulation.
Sure, sure.
Because I did have one or two that had orange tips on them. We usually took them off.
Sure. And though those may have been the more... I'm just guessing here. Maybe more of the smarter toy maker companies that are like, we've seen some liability cases, or our lawyers have told us about these liability cases, so let's just go ahead and get out in front of it and not have this done.
Probably a lot of moms groups.
Yeah,
Moms groups were single-handedly responsible for getting rid of a lot of fun toys back in the day.
I will use that, my example
drinking, of driving. Take away all the fun stuff.
Well, they got rid of all the good playground equipment because their children were eating lead paint. I wasn't eating the paint off of the, but apparently their kids were.
Intelligence is a bell curve.
Yes.
We cut to a bus stop where Davy races ahead to evaluate the walkie-talkies to see how they work. After that, Davy and Kim head to their destination, a high-rise building in the short distance. Davy peers in through the door of the building, surveying his entry point. After quote-unquote sneaking past the guard, the pair locate the floor and suite they are looking for in this building. A guard allows them to locate all that they need to. What the hell was that sentence? Okay. They use the elevator to reach Tektronix, which is on the 7th floor. Waiting for the elevator with them are two gentlemen of middle age. Is one of them Rossovich?
Tim Rossovich. The late, great Tim Rossovich.
I saw the name, but I'm like, that mustache is throwing me off. And that butt, like, those sweatpants did nothing for his butt.
That is the brother of Rick Rossovich.
Okay, all right.
The nicest man in Hollywood.
That's why he looked very familiar. I'm like, that's not, because I recognize the last name, and I'm looking at him like, but I've seen you in other things, though.
Yes.
Well, I can't remember what he's in, but
Tim is the bad guy in a lot of movies back then, but he was the bad guy in, what was that? I used to watch it all the time. Looker.
Oh.
You probably haven't seen Looker.
No, I'm
but a... he did a lot of bad guy work. He was also Tom Selleck's roommate at one point when they were in college, and they look a lot alike, but
yeah, a little.
They went to college together and they were roommates. But he, it's funny because he doesn't look a whole lot like his brother. Tim doesn't get a lot of dialogue in his bad guy roles. He's usually the thug. He's usually chasing around. You might hear him grunt a few times and he might say something. Whereas Rick got
RoboCop.
Yeah, he was probably in that.
I think he was in RoboCop. Sorry.
Was he in RoboCop?
I should probably. He might not have had a big role, but his face is sticking out to me from RoboCop for some reason. Maybe I may have a Mandela effect.
I'm not seeing. Okay. I wouldn't be surprised, but yeah, he did a ton of TV. He was always the bad guy on Magnum, you know, like he was on Magnum as a bad guy. I think he was on Fall Guy or A-Team.
Fall Guy, Knight Rider, A-Team, all of it, yeah.
Sure. And maybe that's where I'm recognizing him from, that he's just, that he's been, because he's a very imposing person.
He's a henchman.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's your classic hench. Yeah,
and his name is usually henchman. And in all, most of his movies, he's henchman.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
In the elevator, Davy spots that one of those men, Rossovich, has a gun. Davy keeps Kim from boarding the elevator when it arrives because of the gun, but Kim doesn't believe him, so she steps into the elevator anyways. From the stairwell, Davey radios Kim. After their short exchange, Davey overhears some radio chatter. Kim locates the catalogs and the vending machine. Davey, in the stairwell, holding his softball grenade, sees Jack Flack apparate at the next stair landing. Davey and Jack talk about past assignments and codenames. At the landing between 6th floor and 7th floor, Davey stops to look out a window, as kids often do. He sees three men across the way in what he assumes is a window, and there are three men assaulting a fourth man. Davey, unaware that he was watching a reflection, is surprised when the now shot fourth man tosses him a video game cartridge called Cloak and Dagger. The dead man falls down the stairwell with a Wilhelm scream. The two of the three assailants shoot at Davey, causing him to run down the stairs.
He's at 1,039,139,5,5,2,6.
Now in the lobby of the building, Davey screams for security and murder. The guard goes to inspect the alleged murder site, but there is no body or strange men.
Or blood.
Yeah.
That was my problem, was the blood. They're fast at cleaning.
Yeah.
They had Absorbol.
Yeah.
Kitty litter.
They did one of those
I got a pocket full of kitty litter, clean up everything. You got it.
They had one of those little, the guys with mops who run in at the end like, doo, 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 doo.
Yeah.
Benny Hill.
Yeah.
The guard doesn't believe Davey, and the police arrive, so the guard takes Davey to the police. A lab coat guy from Textronic has found Davey's dropped a grenade softball. And as everybody does, because they can never, ever leave their softball or baseball alone, he writes his entire name on it.
Osborne.
Back in the day, we did that.
Really?
We wrote our names and addresses on our toys, on our balls.
Okay.
Like soccer, my soccer ball probably had my name.
Okay.
You didn't write on your balls when you were a child? No?
No, no.
My clothes had my name and address sewn into my, like, after my grandmother died, I found the whole, she had a whole spool of, like, just my name and address.
Okay.
And some of my sisters, you know, like, so that stuff got sewn into our sweaters and things. Yeah. We were special. She gave up after. Clearly, she wasn't
doing. You did ride a bus. It was just a little shorter.
I did not. I did not ride a bus. No.
You just didn't know because buses are long in what you remember, but there's little ones.
I walked to school in the heat of the sun.
Ooh.
Not uphill, not downhill, just straight.
Just straight
in the arid land that is Phoenix.
Yep, yep. Davey is brought home by the desk sergeant from Detroit, because that's exactly where that guy is from. It's from RoboCop.
Yeah.
I didn't see his face at first, and I'm looking at the back of his head, and I'm like, I know that motherfucking haircut.
I know the back of his head.
Uh-huh. And then I heard his voice, so I was like, that's the motherfucking desk sergeant from RoboCop.
Numbers, what is it, Murphy?
No, Murphy,
yeah. Murphy is, yeah.
Hal Osborne, played by Dabney Coleman, is terribly upset at Davey. Davey and Jack watch Hal listen to what Davey did at the high-rise building. Hal explains to the detective from Detroit that his wife and Davey's mother had recently died. Both Davey and Hal are having a really challenging time. But the detective is really proud of Davey's patriotism.
He's like, let's make a little conversation. Let's be nice to this dad. You know, like, hey, this kid's not so bad. You know, don't be so hard on him. I think that's
sure. The, yeah.
And I liked how when he answered the door, that was supposed to be a big shock for us. Like, wait, that's Jack Flack.
Yeah.
Because the way he answers the door is like that, the big reveal. Like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Like, ha ha.
Yeah.
Two roles.
Yes. It's the dual role.
In Davey's room, Davey is playing war. When Hal enters his room, the mood grows a little serious. Hal asks Davey what happened. Davey goes on to explain his version with the spies and FBI agents. Davey and Hal talk about how they both miss the wife and mother respectively. Hal wants to take Davey to Dr. Sullivan, but Davey shows the game to his dad, the Cloak and Dagger game, to try and prove what he saw did really happen. However, Hal doesn't believe the answers are in the game. When Hal becomes firm with discipline, Davey gets mouthy. Hal has a heart-to-heart conversation with Davey. But as punishment, Hal takes all of Davey's games, mainly just board games and the RPG games, but none of the, like, video games.
Yeah.
Jack has something to say, but Davey dismisses him. When the phone rings, Hal asks Davey to pick it up. The voice on the other line asks for Davey by his full name, which scares him. So he asks his dad to spend the night in the bed with him. Because that's what I did to my dad.
That's what we did when we were kids.
Well, I'd ask my mom, not my dad. Granted, I was not in Davey's position.
Right. Well, he has a single dad. So that's the only person he can ask.
True.
But since our parents slept together in the same bed, you just kind of said, hey, can I sleep in here?
Yes.
That was always kind of the thing. Can I sleep in here?
Yeah.
And my parents were always like, hey, I'd rather you didn't, like, well, I'll just come and sleep with you until you fall asleep and then I'll leave. Yeah. You know, that was my mom's preference. But we would just kind of wander in, you know, in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
But this is a scene that caused me great annoyance with children in movies. And it bothered me because I knew, I was a child when I saw this, and I knew it was something that adults were telling the children to do, because I was like, no, children wouldn't do that. If somebody calls and uses your full name and your parent says, well, what did they say? And you said, oh, well, they asked who I was. No, they didn't. They asked for you by your full name.
Yeah.
You need to tell your parent that. And that was one of those things when I started noticing that in movies, kids, and now, of course, adults too, never give the full story. It's always to leave it a little open so the adult doesn't believe them. But I was like, stop it. The adult might believe you if you tell them actually what happened.
Yeah.
And so I, of course, as a child, learned from this, and I was like, I will always make sure to give a full and concise, you know, of what happened.
Accounting, yeah.
So that my mother can make her own decision on whether or not I'm telling the truth, because these kids are driving me crazy in these movies.
Yeah, yeah. So the next morning, Hal leaves for work at the airbase. Davey wants Hal to stay home, but Hal can't because he has to go to work. He's got to work a double shift. He's got to get them inspections done. Davey tries to convince him to let him go to work, but Hal's firm in the decision. Now, all alone, Davey contacts Kim over the radio. He wants her to come over, but her mom puts a stop to it because she can hear the whole conversation over the radio. Back at Davey's, the doorbell rings. He makes for the door, but he doesn't answer it. Instead, he goes to look out the front window to see who is there, when all of a sudden, his softball grenade smashes the window, which is followed by a hand. Davey retreats to the side door, but there's another one of the spies that walks right through the French-style door.
Yeah.
Like, just plate, glass, and all. I'm like, I'm not going to get cut here at all.
That's
like,
Tim. The Tim can just walk through windows.
So Davey retreats up the stairs into his room to escape by window.
You see when he comes in the door, like there, he's like trying to get through in the chains there. Yeah. And he's like, I got that.
I got that. I got that. I love that part because that was one of his big lines in the movie. Yeah.
I missed that part. Yeah. I did not see that at all.
I'll get that.
Yeah. I got that. So bad.
Well, it was really bad sound effects. The glass breaking was not good sound effect.
These doors are all made of paper, too. It's fucking like just going through it like it was nothing. Like it was Japan and you're walking through paper houses.
And I think I realized, I may have realized as a child, but I don't think I remembered that they live in more of like a weird townhouse. They live in a townhouse.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Like it is a weird townhouse. Because it is a really weird, because the front door is like right next to the street. But Kim goes like into a gate that leads further into
in another part of the townhome.
Sure.
And which they make it seem like they're just live in the same neighborhood, but they actually live in the same complex, it sounds like.
Yeah.
But it was also when he went to go look out the window, it's like, which window was he looking out? Because in a townhome, you can only have so many front facing windows.
Uh-huh.
Because the other side is somebody else's apartment.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like, I don't know if they thought very hard about how the inside of that place was supposed to set up.
I'm going to guess no.
And I don't think I remember as a kid seeing Kim go into that gate and like thinking, is she going into their backyard? Where is she going?
Sure.
And then now looking at it, I'm like, that's a townhome situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was odd when I had seen it. But I gave it no more thought after that. I was like, but thank you. Davey and Jack are in a mall discussing what to do with the game cartridge. Davey suggests that Morris can help them, but Jack does not like or trust Morris. When Davey arrives at Morris's place, Morris wants to know what's up with the Twinkies. 2 days you skipped out on me.
He failed his mission, you know? Yeah, I gave you two missions.
Yep, yep.
You didn't bring me shit.
None.
Little fucker.
And he gave him some coins to get him those Twinkies. Uh-huh. He's out the cash.
He ain't got no money anymore, dude. Yeah.
50 cents goes a long way, too, in 1984.
So I guess that shop is a real shop in, like, Glendale, California or some shit like that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that. Well, during that time. It's probably not there now.
It's, sure, no. Yeah,
it was right by Universal, the lot, by the studio. Oh. Huh. So.
No, it's in the Glendale Mall. Universal's not in Glendale.
They said it was by Universal.
No, the something else was near Universal, I think.
Mm.
I don't remember.
Like an outhouse?
Yeah, there was an outhouse near Universal. I don't know. I don't think it was near Universal. I've been to that mall, and I don't remember it being near Universal.
Yeah, when you took your short bus?
Yeah, I took my short bus to the mall. I had my bus pass.
Chasing fire trucks. What'd you do yesterday? I was chasing fire trucks all day. It's fine.
There was an old baseball player that used to do that, like 1800s.
Oh yeah.
Is that how he worked out?
Yeah, he would be on the field and he would just be like, "What's going on?" And he'd just run off the field and chase the fire truck. What was his name?
And they weren't. I don't recall. I'd have to go searching through there.
I used to know
He was famous. He was a really good baseball player too.
Yeah, he was. Well, he was good, but he was just so all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
He would get into like a fight, and then he would just get in fight with the fans in the stands. Yeah.
And puppies. God help if anybody brought puppies or dogs. Like he'd be screwed after that.
Yeah.
But after some convincing by Davey, Morris decides to help. So Morris plays forensic scientist and takes apart the game cartridge and is surprised by a microchip that doesn't belong in the video game because he helped and designed the video game and the video game cartridge, so he knows where all these chips should be.
I was going to say that the gentleman's name was Rube Waddell.
Yes.
Waddell.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep.
He died young as fuck, too. 36. Yes.
Yeah.
37.
Well.
But he was put in the Hall of Fame for his truck chasing abilities. Sometimes it's not how you play. It's just the weird shit you do that'll get you where you want to be.
Yes. Yeah. Baseball is filled with that. Sorry to go off on a tangent. But Morris now begins his effort to help find whatever secret is hidden in the cloak and dagger game. Kim calls Davey on the radio, but she gets taken by spies because she went to Davey's house, where the two spies were chilling. Josh, do you know where the sunken Japanese gardens are? Oh, good, you do, because that's where Davey goes next.
Yeah.
that threw me off, like, do you know the Japanese sunken gardens, Davey? Do you? Go there.
Yeah, of course he knows. He lives there. He lives in town. It's like saying, hey, do you know where Encanto Park is? And he's like, yeah, of course. I go there all the time. I'm a child.
But, I mean, the thing about that kid, though, he is a Cowboys fan. There was a Cowboys.
Was he?
When they break through his door or coming through his door, it punches right through the Cowboys sign. And that guy was a football player.
Yeah, was he?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, Tim Rossovich.
Okay. I didn't know that.
He played pro. So that's also where you might have seen him because
sure, yeah. It's possible.
But when he punches right through the Dallas Cowboy thing, I feel like that's a thing. I don't know, man. There's something there.
Do you recall what team he played for? Because it would be funnier if he was playing for the Giants or what they were known as then, the Redskins, or I even think the Cardinals would have.
No, they weren't around yet.
Oh, not in the same division.
They weren't okay. They would have been Chicago still.
No, during the 70s? No.
During that 86 to 71, he was on the Eagles.
Then there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
That's funny. That is a funny coincidence. Before he leaves, Jack suggests that they steal a retail version of the Cloak and Dagger game to trade for Kim. Morris won't know.
Here's a side question. When it comes to imaginary friends, which one you think this guy is worse than like a Drop Dead Fred?
I don't know.
Drop Dead Fred was like weird shit, but it was like he would never like put the girl like in like mortal danger, you know?
Well, the difference
pick
was
up the
that,
gun, shoot the fucker.
But Drop Dead Fred is a real, like he's more real as far as like a, because this kid is like I see Jack Flack as more of the kid's imagination, whereas Drop Dead Fred was a real entity that came to help the child.
We're talking about the end of it.
What do you mean?
Let's revisit this at the end.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. You're right.
At the gardens, at the sunken at Japanese gardens.
At the sunken gardens, she's just 16 years old. The song's in my head. I'm going to sing it at least 5 more times.
Davey spots the Tektronix lab coat guy. They have a small standoff. After the exchange, Davey squirts lab coat guy with fake blood to cover up their escape from the garden.
This guy's always scumbag too, right? He's always a scumbag at something.
This is the first time that I recall. This is the first time that I have ever seen him.
He's a Robert Altman guy. He's a was in Magnolia. He's in Tanner 88, or was it Tanner or whatever?
It's Michael Murphy.
Michael Murphy. He's
Phase 4, Bruce McLeod. Was he the bad guy in Shocker?
He was in White House Down, which I just recently watched when I was bored.
I don't recall.
He used to
be
married to Wendy Crew, who was the wife in Air Force One, Harrison Ford's wife.
Oh, okay.
They were married for many years. I think they just divorced like 10 years ago. No, he's in so many movies because P.T. Anderson uses him a lot because he's a big, Robert Altman fan.
Okay.
So he's in a lot of Robert Altman films and he's in a lot of P.T. Anderson movies.
Okay.
But he's been around for decades and he's still working.
After they escape, the three spies chase after the children. Kim and Davey escape on the city bus because they got their bus passes. The two spies are not too far behind them because their van was
right where it needed to be.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. The blue child snatcher van. Mm,
the Chester van.
Oh, yeah.
Kim apologizes to Davey for thinking that he was dumb.
I know you're very into watching people run. Did you notice the running in this? I saw him literally lock an arm while he was running. Like he just had one in a locked position while he was running.
Weird.
And he was like going down the stairs like that or something. I was like, who was teaching these children how to run? What is going on here?
They were a little stiff.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Forrest Gump, he's a special guy. But he knew how to move those arms.
Yeah.
That's why he was fast.
That's right. They had to make signs to tell him when to stop.
Right.
Yeah. Get over me, you big dummy. I love the South.
Davey spots the two spies chasing them in the Chester van. One of the spies is now told that the kids are expendable. After they have that news, one of these spies puts a suppressor on his .22 pistol. Davey makes a daring escape by almost throwing up, quote unquote, almost throwing up on the bus driver. Kim stays on the bus as Davey draws the attention of the two spies that have been chasing them. Back at Morris's place, he is deep into the cloak and dagger game, and he finds the secret. And the secret code is 1,329,542, which does nothing. Like, that number will never come back again. It makes no other appearance than it's just the number that they needed to reach to unlock.
Yeah.
The store bell rings in the background. Morris shouts 1 minute at the potential customer. The code opens classified data about an SR-71 Blackbird. A noise from behind Morris prompts him to turn around to see the lab coat guy holding a pistol. Morris is shot dead. Davey finds a place to hide under a table along the riverwalk where a couple are drinking some Löwenbräu, or Löwenbräu if it's pronounced in proper German.
Löwenbräunen.
He is soon shooed away. So he spots a boat and decides that he's going to go buy a ticket to ride the boat in order to escape from the two pursuing spies.
Now, I remember this scene a little bit from when I was a kid. I do recall that. I thought he did one of those jump over, like onto the bridge moves. I didn't know it was the way this happens, but I do recall that scene. Yeah, just a fucking weird boat scene and the guy being all creepy and shit. Dude, he's like,
and nobody was paying
cared.
Any attention. They're just kind of like, what? Like, sure. There's a strange man. People were like,
that man's a pervert.
Yeah. But I like how they were very concerned about these men standing up on the boat.
I know.
But they didn't care that
they're like, hey, go on about your moving little child.
Keep eyeing that little boy. Yeah. It was very strange.
Davey is soon spotted by the two spies, but but they can't board the boat because of capacity rules. However, a couple has to leave, which allows the two spies to board the boat. An older couple spot Davy as he is trying to elude the chasing spy or the pursuing spy. They immediately help Davy without a question. And after a failed diversion attempt, Davy makes his escape from the two spies.
His other line, the engine's on fire!
Yeah. Yeah, that was a big line. That was a big line for Tim.
Yeah. Had to make it believable, Tim.
Yeah. I liked it when the one henchman made that couple who was like making out on the boat separate so he could sit in between.
I missed that.
And they were just kind of like, they just did it. They were like, there's a strange man who's making us move apart. Like, we're not going to fight him. We're just going to go ahead and do it.
We're just going to go with this.
Yeah,
and we're like, just bro, go with,
yeah.
Did you not see what we were doing? Yeah,
we're loving each other right now.
Yeah. When Davy arrives to Morris's, he finds that Kim is crying and Morris is nowhere to be found. The bullet hole in the CRT monitor does not bode well for Morris. So Davy and Kim leave. Davy is standing in front of the same high-rise building as earlier. Jack and Davy decide to search the parking garage for lab coat guy's car, and they find it. Somehow they get the trunk open.
The car door was wide open.
The car door was unlocked.
So they jumped
and
in.
The
remember
button.
The yellow buttons? So that's a lot of Cadillacs, I think, but there's a yellow button in the glove box that opens the trunk.
I know of not from a Cadillac, but there are certain models of cars that still put the trunk or the trunk button in the glove box.
Not on the left side.
But I wasn't aware that in that model that it was like that. Yeah. I guess it would make sense, though, if it's a luxury vehicle.
I like that Davy knew exactly where it was.
I know.
There was no looking around. He went straight for it.
Davy's been in a Cadillac his entire
apparently,
life, Megs.
Apparently.
Like,
he's traveling around in these Cadillacs. And I saw that in the movie, and I've never seen a car with that button in the glove box. I get my grandmother's Lincolns, I guess, didn't have that. I don't know where they were.
Yeah, that may have been like a proprietary thing, maybe,
yeah.
Or just a.
Or my grandmother didn't
let
me.
I'm not going to say that's not proprietary. Nobody owns putting a button in the glove box.
I don't.
Like, no one else has this button but us. We are the king of glove box buttons.
Maybe my grandmother didn't let me open her glove box. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Maybe I just wasn't going through my grandmother's personal things.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You respected your elders?
Yeah.
And in the trunk, they find a dead Morris. Davy has to get into the trunk with dead Morris because lab coat guy is coming.
Davy wasn't weirded out enough about a dead body.
Yeah, he's like,
and
yeah,
he climbed in
not
with
a
it.
Problem.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Totally.
And it's his friend. It's not just a dead body. It's his friend. And then he climbs in with it. And I guess when I was a kid, I was kind of like, I wouldn't do that. But it didn't shock me because it was a movie that they weren't concerned, because back then in movies people weren't as concerned about things.
Sure,
but
sure.
I think that he should have been a little bit like, oh shit, you know, like maybe a little cry, a tear.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
Like a sweet touch of the head, you know, like
something to show that he had some type of feeling for his friend. So Davy has to climb into the trunk because lab coat guy is coming, and they don't shut the trunk the entire way, and lab coat guy doesn't notice that his trunk is not shut by 2 inches.
It's
like
so
it's hard
open.
Not
it
to fucking
so
miss
open.
Me. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I guess my trunk is shut. I can see into it.
They at least should have had him like looking at something, like like reading
like,
something, or
he heard a noise, or somebody called him from somebody made a noise back that way.
Because I would be hard pressed not to notice how open that was. That would be really annoying to me.
Yeah, I agree. So lab coat guy gets into the car and he drives off to a destination unknown. Ruby Soho. Lab coat guy reaches his destination where the other two spies are waiting for him. They are there to make a trade of some sort with a dude or a person that has some missing fingers. The big spy Rossovich stays behind to keep tabs on lab coat guy's car. He notices the trunk of the car opens, but he doesn't see Davy in the trunk or anywhere around. Davy heads into the Alamo because that's where lab coat guy went to go meet his contacts. And he runs into the older couple from the boat. Davey sees lab coat guy drop his case that holds the cloak and dagger cartridge onto the floor of the Alamo interior. It is here that my suspicions were confirmed. Davey then goes and takes the bag from where it was left. When he has the bag, he begins to run for the exit, but is stopped by Alamo security. The older couple cover for Davey. The older man stays behind to try and smooth things over with lab coat guy. But Davey is disappointed because he believes the older man gave lab coat guy the game cartridge that he was trying to retrieve.
You know what they should have checked? The basement. You know, it's in the basement at the Alamo. My bike! I love Paul Rubens.
The older man gives up the ruse. He tells Davey to check the bag to see if the game cartridge is in there. Davey goes to check the bag to see the game cartridge. Davey mentions something about what the lab coat guy had said about his contacts. Davey mentions that he only knows that one of them are missing fingers. So when the older woman asks to see the game cartridge, she removes her glove, revealing that she has missing fingers. Davey is trapped, and the older woman chloroforms Davey. Davey wakes up the trunk of the lab coat guy's car. I think Morris is still in it at that point, yeah. The two spies are in a hurry to make quick work of Davey, but Jack Flack shows him how to push the back seat over so they can escape from the trunk, and he finds a car phone, so he decides to call Kim to inform her of the older couple, not his dad, not anybody else that he could have called to be like, hey, people have kidnapped me and are like trying to kill me. And I don't know where I'm at. Help.
No, I love there's one scene where, or I think it's coming up, but I just have to say it right now. It's when Dabney Coleman picks up the phone when he goes to check to see where his son is at the girl's house. And he's like, let me use your phone. And he just picks it up and he goes, operator, I need to call the police. It's like, was there not a 911 back then?
I don't think
switchboard time or anything like that.
No, it wasn't switchboard time.
You could dial 0 and have them do that for you.
Yeah, but I mean, you could still dial 911 and it'll go through.
Yeah, we were just learning about 911 then.
Okay.
You think so?
Okay.
I mean, I remember like 911 wasn't a huge thing when I was little until like a certain, you kind of got to that age when they were really pushing it and they were doing commercials all the time to like dial 911. Like I remember seeing it in on top of one of the police cars in one of the James Bond movies, and I'm like, oh, they know about 911.
Hmm. Okay.
It was when they were in America, of course.
Sure, sure. So it would have been Live and Let Die.
It was.
Da-na-na.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been Live and Let Die.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, ooh, 911's really catching on. But that was, you know, and I think for a little while it was kind of regional. I don't know that it was everywhere just right away.
And it's possible. I programs like that, I'm gonna speculate. It starts out in bigger cities and then they emulate from there into smaller cities and such. So that way there's a program, there's a template, so to say.
Because back then, back in the day, we would pick up phones all the time and just dial 0.
Oh, sure.
And be like, oh, what time is it?
Yeah.
If we didn't have a clock or anything, we were supposed to be home at a certain time and we were walking down the street and there was a Circle K, I guess we could have gone inside and looked at a clock. I'm sure they had one. But sure. We would just pick up the phone and hit 0 and ask them what time it was.
Yeah, that's how I told time for like the 16 hours I was in the Glendale holding cell.
Oh.
And I found that out because somebody else was doing it. Oh. And that was it. Like it would tell you the time. Nobody would pick up, though. Oh, it would just
tell you.
Yes, yeah. After he had made the phone call to Kim, Davey overhears lab coat villain explain his plan about blowing up Kim and half of her neighborhood. When the spy trio discover that Davey has escaped, a chase ensues with Davey driving the Cadillac. There are some funny driving mishaps before Davey crashes into some construction on the road. Davey radios Kim, who is at a bus stop. Beeping noise is coming from her radio. Apparently that beeping is only audible to the audience and not to Kim. It is the beeping noise is the same beeping sound that was emitted from the lab coat guy's detonator when he was explaining his villain plan. The spies catch up to the crash car, and Davey and Jack barely escape. At a payphone, Davey now calls his dad and tells him everything that has happened. However, the tall spy had driving the Chester van has found him and has found Davey and tries to run him over. But Jack, the imaginary friend of Davey, somehow pulls him out of the way as the van runs over the phone booth and careens into a jewelry shop where the tall spy dies. I don't know how. I don't think that crash was too impactful. I think maybe he might have been unconscious. Yeah, that was not that hard of a crash to like kill the guy.
And then of course you have to have the cuckoo sound because there are a lot of clocks. Yeah, in the It's a clock shop / jewelry store. So you get a lot of the cuckoo clock sounds.
Yes. So back at the Riverwalk, Davey is attempting to lose the last two spies. In order to help better kill Davey, the spies break out the heavy artillery. Basically, just a suppressed Uzi. Davey stumbles across. Ooh, do you know the Uzi is a shortened surname of the Jewish inventor? It's like Uziel or something like that. Oh. Like, so they just called it an Uzi. Davey,
they called it a Juicy.
You said it, not me.
Yeah, it's fine.
Davey stumbles running from the two spies and falls and scrapes his knee. Jack wants Davey to kill the two remaining spies, but Davey doesn't want to kill anyone.
It's the worst imaginary friend ever. Such a bastard. Fucking kill the spies. Kill these motherfuckers. He's like, get them.
Well, they were going to kill him.
Yeah, I understand.
It's self-preservation.
But yes, agreed. Davey doesn't want to kill anyone. Besides, he doesn't even have any weapons. And Jack comes up with the crossfire gambit. In order to spur Davey into action, Jack tells him, if you don't save Kim, who will? Davey goes and finds his hiding place. And when the two spies are in the most advantageous position, Davey reveals his position.
That was a tense scene, though.
Yeah.
He shoots the rat, but he like pulls his leg in and he's just sitting there sweating on the ground. Like, it's like, oh my God.
In a red jacket.
Red jacket, don't stand out at all. Everybody knows it. It blends in with the night.
Yeah, that's why Batman famously wears a red suit.
Well, he made his little partner wear it.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Come here, Robin.
That's why they always die.
Well, mostly.
Mostly. Davey draws the fire of the lab coat guy, which leads into the other spy, killing him. Davey, convinced by Jack, picks up the gun of the dead spy. He then flees. Jack tries to warn Davey, but he doesn't listen. Davey, now trapped by the lab coat guy, has no other option but to shoot the lab coat guy. In order to draw the attention away from Davey, Jack Flack now turns into a ghostly form and appears to lab coat guy.
Okay, so now we can speak about it.
He didn't appear to lab coat guy.
Yeah, he did.
No, he didn't. He didn't.
Because you could see on his face, he was like...
No, the kid kept looking at him. He's like, "Who? What are you talking to?" So that's when he turned his attention. He never could see him.
We got that and the fact that when he was rescued from the phone booth, he was pushed and moved out of the way. Therefore, he's a real... And then he starts speaking... Well, that's a part going to come up.
No, The ghostly look was kind of for us to think that he was seeing him, but it was just Davey seeing him.
But he shot at it.
But Davey was seeing that. That wasn't what the lab coat guy was seeing.
Why would the lab coat guy shoot there is the question.
He shot there because Davey went like, what are you doing? Like, stop it, Jack. And that's when he looked over and he just shot because he thought that there was somebody there. That's an old, it's used in movies a lot. Like when you act like somebody's over there and you're like, hey, stop it. And then they turn their attention over there and then you get them.
He was a real boy.
No.
Just like, remember the movie Jersey Girl?
No.
Same
nobody
thing.
Does.
Same thing
nobody
happens.
Nobody remembers
that.
The movie
The
Jersey
same
Girl.
Thing happens in that movie.
That was a
we believe it.
We are not talking about Jersey Girl ever.
We like a long discussion about Jersey Girl and how it's real. And it's Kevin Smith's best movie, okay?
Well, I will go with that because Kevin Smith doesn't have very many good movies.
So whether or not Lab Coat Guy sees the ghost of Jack, he fires in that general position, which allows Davey to shoot Lab Coat Guy. Davey is mad that Jack tricked him into shooting Lab Coat Guy, but Jack, now affected by the rounds that were shot at him, is dying. Davey and Jack have a friend's goodbye.
He was affected by Davey stepping on him, on his toy.
Is that what it is?
Davey killed him by stepping on him and not believing anymore.
Yeah, that'll do it.
He even said, this is like when your father stopped believing.
Ooh.
See? Therefore, he is an entity that has been through the eons, but that family lineage is imaginary friend. 1800s.
That family lived in Texas. I'll give it that he was an imaginary, but I don't believe that the trench coat guy saw, or no, lab did. Coat guy saw him.
Because he says something about, like, he believed, therefore he saw him.
Yeah, like, he believed that there's somebody over there. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's like when your mind plays tricks on you. Like, when you think that there's somebody in your house, and all of a sudden you start seeing things moving by your head.
Cloak and Dagger 2, it's about, it's called It. And he changes into an alien / clown. Boom. Stephen King wrote it.
Davey looks at his watch. He only has 28 minutes before Kim is exploded. We cut to Kim, who is arriving at the airport to stop the old couple. We cut to Hal and Marilyn, who's Kim's mom, and they share about what they know about their missing kids. And then this is the time where Hal just picks up the phone. It's like, get me the police. Oh, they're already there, huh?
Put me on with the detective guy. Yes. I'll wait.
Davey tries to take a bus to the airport, but he has no pass or any money. So he decides that he'll ask Louis Anderson for a ride.
Yeah.
This was the most surprising thing of this whole fucking movie. I was like, that's Louis fucking Anderson.
Louis Anderson. I know. I've noticed it over the years. I was like, oh, there's Louis Anderson, but I forget. And so when I see him again, I'm like, oh, I forgot Louis Anderson.
And this is before, this has to be before, like, Coming to America, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A little bit.
Coming to America was like 1987 or
sure,
something.
Sure, sure. Davey is denied by Louis Anderson because he has no money, but the next guy he asks agrees to take him to the airport. Davey, in no other city at this time of night, would ever get taken to the airport by that gentleman.
No.
He would have been kidnapped and done things horrible would have happened to poor little Davey.
Yeah.
And the Cloak and Dagger would have been like, oh, well, Davey's missing now. Well, like, we've got a missing child on our hands.
Well, Jack Flack would have had to talk him out of being tied up.
Yeah, sure.
Had some old
you going to kill him now, or are you going to let him be, Davey? You got no choice, like, now, you son of a bitch.
He's like, when I'm done with my taxi driving shift, you're going to pay, boy.
Yes.
You know one thing, though? No one had a Texas accent in this fucking movie.
They did
this
not.
Place in fucking San Antonio.
Dabney Coleman did. But Dabney Coleman is from Texas.
Yeah, but he has a more subtle.
He does.
It's much more subtle.
And Henry Thomas is from Texas.
And he has zero.
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 A lot of people don't have Texas accents.
Yeah.
It's
going to be, it's more of a, I'm going to just make a guess and speculate that it's probably more of a cultural thing where maybe the more rural you live, maybe the more
this is,
more
this
of an
is the
accent.
Big city. Yeah, they're not going to have it.
I think
the big
they all sound like this, right? There's like hanging around, drinking sweet tea on the porch.
No,
a little bit.
It's not like a city. Like, the city folks aren't necessarily going to have a Texas accent unless they lived out rural and then moved to the city.
Sure, and unless they're just trying to affect something because they want to.
Yeah.
Isn't that where they make paste pecan sauce too?
It is. Yep. No, that's New York City.
No.
Oh, yeah,
no,
that's
no,
right.
Paste is San
paste
Antonio.
Paste is San Antonio. And
where's
it's the
that other one,
stuff.
New York City?
The other one's New York City.
Yeah, that's just pasta sauce, guys.
We cut to Kim, who's trying to get an airport policeman to stop the old couple from leaving. The old couple arrive just as Kim is being taken away to go tell somebody.
Now, the old couple is an actual married couple.
Really?
They're Hollywood royalty. I mean, they've been around forever. They worked in, he was an old, Westerns.
Okay.
And she worked with him a lot. They were both in The Rescuers.
Oh.
They did voices in The Rescuers.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Pretty
and
cool.
They, Fox and the Hound.
Okay.
Yeah. They did a lot of voice work later on. I think they were both in Psycho.
Hmm.
Yeah, they were.
He was the sheriff or something.
Oh, okay.
And this director directed Psycho 2.
Oh.
And Henry Thomas was in Psycho 4. Yeah.
Okay.
So this is a very psycho movie. Yeah.
All right. Psycho-centric.
Yeah.
But the old man ditches his gun as we cut away from them over to Davey, who is asking the taxi driver to go faster. So they just speed up the film and it makes him go faster. Cut back to Kim, who's trying to convince a room full of police to stop this old couple. And they're just doing what 70s cops do. And they're like, eh, we're not going to listen to you, little girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Davey has arrived to the airport where he starts to look for Kim. He begins at the information desk. He waits like 20 seconds before he runs off to go to
the gate.
Yep. He tries to bypass the metal detector because all there was just a metal detector and an x-ray machine. Really easy to get through the airport really quick.
Oh, yeah. Back then, there was just nothing stopping
you. You could arrive 20 minutes before your plane had to leave, and you'd make it in time with 10 minutes to spare.
Yeah.
Yeah, the worst was just waiting in line to, like, check your baggage.
Yes. Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Now it's like...
Yeah. That's the least headache part.
Mm-hmm.
So he asks the airport security when he spots the old couple to stop them. He tells the policeman at the checkpoint that those old people are his mom and dad. That was the second hardest thing to believe in this movie. That anybody during this time would look at that and be like, you sure?
You sure about that? Sure?
I don't think they are. Pretty sure she's in menopause.
A long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. But regardless, the cop asked them to come back. The older couple try and deny the claims, but Davey tells them about the game that he has in the... About the game Cloak and Dagger that the old man has in his camera case. When the old man goes to hand over his case, he's eyeing the gun on the policeman's hip. It is at this time when Kim arrives, which compels Davey to rush over to her and remove the radio from her backpack. The old man slams his camera case into the policeman in order to grab the service revolver. The old man then grabs Davey as a hostage. Hal and Marilyn arrive at the airport, as does the detective from Detroit and some other police backup. The old man shoots a guy in the leg as the old couple and Davey retreat towards an airplane out on the tarmac. The old couple has threatened to kill Davey if a pilot that can fly them to Cuba isn't found within the next 5 minutes. With time running out, Hal volunteers to be the pilot. On the plane, Davey is told to sit, and he opens the radio with the bomb in it. Davey is trying to coax Jack back into existence, and Hal arrives to the plane to be the pilot. While Davey continues to plead with Jack, Hal calls to Davey to the cockpit, so the old lady goes to collect him to bring him up front. Davey goes forward as she is calling the old man back where Davey was sitting, because she has spotted the bomb in the radio. Davey is almost caught by the old man, but he is told to forget the boy and come to defuse the bomb. Davey reaches Hal safely, so he locks the cockpit door. The old man cannot disarm the bomb, so he shoots at the door. Hal lowers Davey out of the cockpit window.
That's a fucking 30-foot drop.
And right in front of the tires. And he's just like, roll away when you get down there. You're telling a little boy to suddenly... and it was so close in the film. It was...
Yeah.
He was almost smashed.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't really know why he didn't just stop the plane or so. Yeah. Like, he started it up. He started taxiing. Yeah. And it's like, well, just go ahead and stop it now. They're away. You know, like, you don't need to keep driving it.
He knew where the throttle was.
Yeah.
He pushed the throttle forward.
Yeah.
He could have throttled back.
I didn't understand that part. And I didn't know why he just dropped his son in front of a moving plane. I know why. It was for us. It was for excitement.
Mm-hmm.
But looking back, I'm like, that's just terrifying. And no parent would do that.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah. After he drops from the airplane, escapes the wheel smashing, he starts to chase after the plane. But, you know, it's a plane and he's a kid, so he can't catch up to it. He watches as the bomb goes off and the plane explodes, falls down onto the tarmac, and begins to cry. But from the flame, the silhouette of Jack Flack emerges with his shoulder pads and his beret. But shortly, it soon morphs into Hal, delighting little Davey. A joyous reunion is had between father and son, and Davey tells Hal that he doesn't need Jack Flack anymore because he has him. Roll credits.
You're my hero,
beautiful
friend.
It was beautiful. Oh.
Whoa.
Wow.
That dropped suddenly.
That suddenly happened. But my, I did love it when Hal gets on the plane and he's trying to get Davy's attention, and Davy's just sitting back there fiddling with the
fucking around.
Yeah, fucking around, you know. And Hal announces that he's Captain Jack Flack, and it's kind of like, because he is. He was Davy modeled him after his own father. That's yeah. that kind of like the guy he wants to play with, and I'm sure Hal's Jack Flack was probably modeled after his own father, and wasn't the same, but was.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah,
an archetype being passed down to father to son.
I wanted a little more action with Hal and the girl's mother. Like, I was like, I always was like, I think they're gonna date. You know, are they gonna date?
They just left that in the ether for you.
There was that one small scene, like in the beginning, like after Marilyn told Kim, like, yeah, tell him you'll be back. You'll be over to his fucking house after
she
breakfast.
She starts asking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. What's Kim's like, he's not your type. Like, how do you know what my type is, little girl?
Like, Kim was
I haven't had sex in like 2 years. And like, I'll take a type.
Kim was the most mature person in this movie. Yes. And she spoke like a middle-aged woman. Yes. You know, she was just kind of like, well, he's not your type. And like, leave it alone, Ma. You know, it was just kind of weird. And but then the mom and Hal are just kind of running around together, and they're like, oh, we're a fam. Like, they were standing by the window, she with her arm around her daughter, Hal like practically with his arm around her. Then when he goes, like, I'm going to go handle this, he pats the little girl on the head. Yes. Like, he messes her hair. Yeah. You know, like, tosses her hair. And he's like, I will be the captain. I manage a ground crew. I have a license to taxi, which I never noticed when I was a kid. I never noticed that part. So I didn't understand why they were like, what are you going to do when they expect you to fly the plane? I'm like, I thought he was a pilot.
So did I.
So I was confused. I finally heard the part where he said, I'm licensed to taxi planes. Yes. And I'm like, oh, he's just ground crew. He doesn't fly.
Yeah.
When I was a little kid, I think I thought everybody in the Air Force was a pilot.
Sure.
So
sure.
That whole situation when they were like, well, how are you going to fly the plane? What are you going to do when they expect you to fly the plane? I'm like, oh, that's what that meant.
Yeah.
He doesn't actually know how to fly. He just knows how to fake it.
Yeah.
You know, like.
He knows how to get, he knows how to do so much up into supplying power. This is how I turn. This is how I brake. This shuts off the engine. He probably knows the processes to fly the plane.
Yeah.
But he's logged zero air hours.
Right. And I didn't buy the part where he went to pressurize the cabin.
Yeah, sure.
I did not buy that. He wouldn't know where that was. That's a commercial plane.
Yeah, true.
Maybe he was like, I need to figure out a way to get to look down there. And he was like, I'm just going to flip something. You know, who knows?
It's possible. Just because you're licensed to taxi doesn't mean that he wasn't capable or wasn't aware of where other systems were. But it's also plausible that he could have just said that because, are those older spy couples going to know exactly where the cabin pressurization switch is?
He could have been just flipping anything and we wouldn't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I want, like, 8 years later, they're married, and then it's outside
who's
the house.
Married?
The
Hal and Marilyn?
Hal and Marilyn are married. And then it's that outside the house, like, and you're arguing, and it's like, I told you when we got married, she's your sister now. You can't fuck your sister. That's what I wanted.
Is that what you want?
That's what I wanted. It's like, it's obvious that that's going to be a thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a little young love between them. You can see it. It's almost like they're married already because she has that, like, that nagging mom voice.
It is almost like they're married already.
Yeah, it's very nagging mom voice. And then he's just like, he's just a man who's a fuck up. You know, he's like, I don't know, fucking I shot the guy. He's got murder under his belt already.
That's true. Like,
he's a little boy who has been in the trunk with a dead body. He's killed a person, and he's... Oh yeah, he killed.
Well, okay. He killed one person. However, he orchestrated the death of another.
Yeah, but he pulled the trigger on one of them.
Oh yeah.
And I'm just still concerned that he rode around with a dead body for a while, like more than once.
Davey Osborne is going to have some PTSD over this fucking, like, less than 24 hours. Let's say 48 hours.
Kids were a lot more resilient back in the 80s.
It's true.
We were not big old pussies like they are now. He's going to be just fine.
Do you... you want me to come back and get your rating, or do you have a rating right now?
Oh, I have. I think I have a rating. Come back to me.
Okay. Josh, what are your final reactions on this?
Entertaining. It's not what I remember at all. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know why. Just like, but like I said, I didn't recall a lot of it.
Yeah.
In your beginning part, it did need a lot more Dabney in it, you know, because the kid's just a fuck. Oh God,
yeah,
just as bad he is in ET.
Oh God,
this fucking little.
He's not
little shit weasel.
He's great.
Just fucking like he's always squinty and crying all the time.
He's a wonderful actor.
Like he has asthma, just fucking can't even breathe. But I'm gonna give this 2.5 extended antennas.
Oh my God.
2.5. Because they.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, fucking
well, but that's also the sign of a decent two-way handheld radio at that time,
yeah,
with a longer antenna.
But
compared to like the Fisher Price
Walker
when
talking. You were far apart, sure, yes, not fucking like right. A building, you
yeah,
know, away.
Sure, sure.
You don't remember the fun of the 1980s and playing with real walkie-talkies.
Probably not.
No, just the Fisher Price ones.
Yeah, those were terrible.
I had a Batman and Robin one.
You may as well just stand
red.
Next to the person you want, yeah. were trying to talk to with those.
Yeah.
I hated those.
Yeah, I don't know if I will ever watch this movie again. I wish there would have been more Dabney Coleman.
Yeah.
I wish there. I would have liked to have seen a longer opening sequence with Dabney Coleman. I'm probably asking too much, but I'd like a James Bond esque sort of opening,
sexy ballroom dancing
sure,
and shit.
Sure,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you know, just something that gives a little bit of oomph to it. But this was an
8-year old boy's version of it.
Yes.
The children
exactly.
were playing with their little toys.
Yes, and it was very apparent. Well. That's what they tried to get through in the opening sequence. With the, yeah. Here's a two fucking huge D12 coming down the road. I'm like, got you now.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this 2D12. If I had seen this movie when I was younger.
Yeah. It's hard to watch a movie.
Different.
It's hard to come straight into it. I still love it. I still think it's fun to watch. I will watch it again. This will not be my last time watching it. I've seen it many, many times before. If it comes on, I watch it. I chose to watch it and I enjoyed it. But I will take away a couple of points for some of the bad sound effects. But you know, some of the lame stances that the men took while they were shooting their guns, I thought it was a little awkward.
Nobody taught them how to do
it. It was very strange, but I'm going to give it 4.
Okay.
Japanese sunken gardens.
All right.
Because I've got to go check this place out.
Yeah.
It sounds amazing.
I mean, it didn't look Japanese at all. I'm going to say that.
What?
I didn't see any Japanese stuff there.
It didn't have
the red arches and stuff, you know what I mean? Like those classic like red arches that they have.
That's
the gates and they didn't
China
show
has that too though.
They didn't show a lot
Japanese.
Of it.
Yeah, it's Japanese, yeah.
Well, I know, but like there it's mostly about the plants, I think.
It from the
no
minimal stuff that I understand, it's a garden. The garden. Japanese gardens are supposed to induce like a Zen type feeling.
And I don't think we really saw a lot of the garden.
No, we didn't. You only saw Davey's shot when he was on his perch looking for dude.
I bet it's phenomenal.
And it looks great. I would like to walk through it. I bet it feels fucking fantastic during the summer with all those plants around. I bet you it's pretty cool compared to some of the other areas.
Yeah, here we have the Friendship Garden.
Ooh.
Japanese Friendship.
Ooh.
That actually is in San Antonio, though.
That
sunken garden.
I believed all the exterior stuff was in San Antonio.
Yeah.
Like minus the car chase and maybe the airport. I've never been to the San Antonio airport, so I can't say for sure. I do remember being to the Alamo, not the interior of the Alamo, because I don't know if we can get into it. I know.
You saying you remember the Alamo?
Uh-huh. I remember the Alamo.
I didn't go to the basement, though.
No, I did not. No. That'll bring us to our next segment, which is our next genre and next movie. After putting it into the random list generator, we have come up with movies that are feature German lead actors.
And actresses.
And actresses.
I think we're supposed to just say actors nowadays.
Yeah,
actors. The actresses got all pissy about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, actors encompasses everybody.
All right.
Unless somebody else says that they're an actress, then I'll take that word, but I've blanketed it.
Okay. Yeah, I can identify with that.
All right.
Can you identify with that?
Yeah.
I would hope so.
And I have chosen to go with a movie that I have not seen that stars Michael Fassbender. It is called Hunger from 2008.
Herr Fassbender.
Yeah. It is available to rent on Prime and a couple other places, YouTube. It is available to watch if you do have a subscription to Amazon Plus, or if you still do the cable thing, I think you can watch it on Amazon on demand. I don't know. AMC on demand. I'm guessing. If you want to watch that movie and catch back up with us next time, cool. It is Hunger.
Hunger.
And then now with that, it brings us to our next segment, which is Give Me the Juice.
Ooh, the juice.
Megs, what you got?
Well, I watched I watched Hitman.
Oh, okay.
Have you watched
What's the guy's name?
I just call him that.
Glenn Powell.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, it was a good movie. I wish it was a little bit better. I liked it. I loved his characters that he does.
Okay.
In the movie, he did a great job. He was great. All the actors were great. It's just that I always want a little bit more. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just wanted a little bit more, but it was good. It was a good movie.
Nice. Very cool. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Josh, how about you?
I watched recently a movie, Burnt, with Bradley Cooper, where he's like a chef.
Oh, okay.
And he's like, I guess he was a French chef. He was working with some people, and then he fucked everybody over or something like that. He's like a total addict, crazy guy, and he's trying to get his third Michelin star, and it's this whole thing. It's got a good cast in it too. It's 2015, 2016, something like
okay,
that.
Okay.
I enjoyed it though. It's that look into the kitchen where you're like, fuck, chefs are assholes and they're so bitter and fucking they hate themselves. So
sure.
Just know if you know a chef, they're fucking they're going through it.
No
reason, and it's their fault they chose it. So
yeah.
They always let them know that.
Yeah.
But it was a good movie. I enjoyed it.
Other than that,
I mean, watching The Acolyte, but it's fucking stupid. Yeah, I'm still going to watch it.
I'm still going to watch it too and try and see what they're doing with it. But I...
Yeah, fuck that.
They're not doing anything new with the lore.
No.
Like, they're just retconning stuff. Like,
that's all it is, yeah.
Or making reasons to justify.
And the guy from Squid Game is so good.
Like, he is.
He's really good in it, but it's just there's everything around it is just like a fucking crumbling castle of made out of shit.
It's Andor still the better series that they've done out of all that.
Yeah,
Andor is by far the superior.
Kathleen Kennedy or whatever her name is just dry humping the shitty walls of the building. Making it crumble.
It was like what the car did to the canyon wall, just hitting it over and over again, and shit
Bong.
Just falls off
shit
and just
flying off.
Dies. I've been watching a series. It's not really, it's newish. I think it was either late last year or early this year. It's called I Am a Virgo.
The big guy?
Yeah.
I never watched it.
Yeah, it has social commentary in it. Of course it is. It's Boots Riley. Great director, great writer, but he's a social commentator, so he's going to bring his views into it. Still fun. it's still a story that really hasn't. I'm not going to say the story. The way the story is being told is a newish perspective.
Okay.
It's fun. I'm enjoying it. I'm about third. I think I'm fourth. Yeah. Fourth episode into it. There's only 7 episodes. It's only 1 season. I'm enjoying it. It's pretty cool. Brings us to now our next segment, which is reviews. We don't have any. However, we did get a rating on Apple Podcast. So, yeah, it was a 5-star rating. But no reviews, though. They didn't bother to leave a review. They just left a 5-star rating. So, you know.
Yay.
We appreciate it. Whoever that was, thank you.
I don't have Apple stuff. It wasn't me.
I don't have Apple either, so it wasn't me either. And nothing on Spotify either, so. And nothing on Audible, too. So, but thank you for whoever left that rating. We appreciate it.
I'd like to give a shout out to the late, great Donald Sutherland tonight.
Oh, that is true. Yes. He was one of
my favorite actors of all time.
Did that news break today or was it yesterday? It's okay. I'm.
You think they're going to bury him with Popo?
I hope
so.
Popo.
That goes over me.
Beer fest.
Oh, little doll.
I forget. Jürgen Prochnow is in that movie too.
Yeah.
Which was a German actor too.
Yes.
Ooh. Was there?
Are you going to eat anything specific while you watch Hunger?
Probably not.
I don't think that's a good idea.
I think you should. Ooh. Yeah.
I think it's going to be a real sad movie.
Get some Wiener Schnitzel.
I think there's going to be a couple deaths. Like, it's going to be really, really, like, it's going to be fucking depressing. Like, I have a feeling it's going to be depressing. If I'm going to eat anything, it's going to be peanut butter and chocolate while I... yep. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. So if you'd like to either leave a review on Spotify, you can. You can do it on Apple Podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram at the Amateur Movie Review Hour. And you can also email us at the Amateur Movie Review Hour at gmail.com. Thank you for listening. Go watch Hunger and listen next time. Check you later.
Good night.
Auf Wiedersehen.